Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Get Yourself the Job. Regular listeners will know right away that this is not Jennifer Hill, but Allison Garrido. I am filling in for Jennifer today while she's traveling, and I'm thrilled to be here with you on this Labor Day. I have a wonderful guest, Katherine Jackson. Katherine's a leadership coach specializing in working with managers and leaders to design and create confidence, career success strategies, and resilience. She's helping leaders to understand how to support their team and achieve that career success and resilience as well. Katherine's authored a book called Resilience at Work, Practical Tools for Career Success. The book is an essential guide to maintaining resilience in an ever-changing environment, whether you're working in a turbulent field, job searching, navigating the job market, or simply trying to realize your career ambitions. The book is absolutely one of my favorites, and it's based on Katherine's own experience of working under extreme circumstances in post-earthquake Christchurch, New Zealand, where we are both reporting from today. Katherine's really looking at emotional honesty as the foundation of true resilience, exploring how your levels of self-care influence your ability to re-energize and stay strong. Consider how having the right sort of connections play a part in your ability to flourish. And then finally, really reflect on how you've been learning and changing along your own resilience journey. So thank you so much for joining us today, Katherine.
You are so very welcome. It's absolutely brilliant. I can't believe the power of technology bringing us all the way from New Zealand over to the United States. Thank you so much for welcoming me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And a fun fact for our listeners. So while we are both in New Zealand, I am reporting from Wellington, New Zealand, on the bottom part of the North Island. And Katherine's in Christchurch. So it is through wonderful modern technology and our wonderful producer at LA Talk Radio, Sam, that we're all here together.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. Well, thanks again for being here, Katherine. I'll have you, if you don't mind, just start by sharing with us a little about your career path.
Absolutely. So I think I've always been fascinated by why two people could be in exactly the same job, and one of them would love it and the other one would absolutely hate it. And so that was something that really triggered my interest back in the early 90s, I'm afraid, when I first started considering what I was going to study when I went to further education. And so I chose to specialize in understanding what motivates and drives people at work. What is it about workplaces that both attracts us and then keeps us there, and doesn't just keep us there under duress, but actually keeps us in a role where we can really thrive enjoy the work that we do. So I made it my mission from then on to choose opportunities, whether that was learning and development opportunities or workplace opportunities, to really, really rev up my understanding of those key factors. What is it that attracts us to organizations and then keeps us there in really great roles that mean that by the time we go home every day, we've had a really great day at work?
Amazing, amazing. And that's something we don't really ever zoom out and think about. What attracts us to workplaces, right? We just kind of trust that gut reaction.
Yeah, totally. And to be perfectly honest, you know, that gut reaction is super important. And I think you started by talking about emotional honesty. I think if we look at the science around this, lots of us know what our gut's telling us, but many of us choose to override it. You know, so we will be attracted to a role that we know isn't quite right for us, but we take it anyway. And at certain times in our career, that might be the only choice, but actually it's not necessarily the best choice. So it's really intriguing to sort of connect a bit more with our hearts and listen to both our hearts and our heads when it comes to making career choices. And that ability has kind of taken me through my own career so far. You know, I started out in the professional services and finance industry. And had about a 13 year career within corporate UK, so within corporate banking in the UK. And, you know, that in itself taught me all sorts about resilience, but I didn't really realise it at the time. And we then moved to New Zealand in 2006. And that was after I'd had to make myself and my team redundant. So that was actually a really interesting opportunity to look at what did I really want, what was really important to me, and how could I make that happen. And so landed into New Zealand with every intention of setting up a coaching practice to find that actually New Zealand wasn't quite ready for the world of coaching yet. And so again, you know, had to really dial up into my resilience to achieve my goals when actually the world around me wasn't quite going to plan. So that's kind of my career in a nutshell.
Well, but now you are doing a little bit of that coaching, is that right?
A little bit, yes, absolutely. So we moved here in 2006, and you know, I guess one of the core foundations for resilience is this element of learning. And so I quickly realized through getting feedback through organizations, you know, I contacted organizations to see if they were interested in talking to me about leadership coaching, to find that actually, no, they weren't. But what was happening in the world around me was that we were starting to enter an economic crisis. And so there were organizations that were retrenching, that were laying people off. And so dialing up that learning foundation, I sort of sat down and thought, actually, what if I used exactly the same skill set, but just called it something a little bit different? And so I reapproached organizations and actually positioned myself more as a support for career transition. So helping people to move much more successfully out of perhaps organizations that were downsizing and into more rewarding roles or to other roles with a much smoother journey. And that went amazingly well. So isn't it interesting? You know, we can look at using the same or similar knowledge, skills and abilities and think about how we package them up and then present them to an employer in a format that the employer is actually looking for at the time.
Absolutely. You touched on two things in that story that were really impactful for me. One is that you did some market research, right? It's so easy, I think, sometimes to say, okay, this is the job I want to do, and this is how I'll go about getting it, and then charge forward without asking those questions, right? And once you start to ask questions, then that second part is it allows you to shape your message. You don't have to change the work you're doing, but it's about shaping it so people can hear what you're saying, which I think is so important.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I see far too many people who sort of, as you, I love the phrase you use there, they sort of charge ahead into a job search without really thinking about making themselves really relevant to the employer. And that we can do that relevance in lots of different ways. And all of those ways have to be authentic. You know, we're not you know, overselling ourselves, and we're not selling ourselves as something that we're not. And so we're having to be authentic, but we're actually positioning that information in a way that makes sense for what that employer is looking for. So really simple things like talking to recruitment consultants, for example, in the industry to find out what are the hot topics in that industry, reading newspapers to find out what's or industry journals to find out what are some of the relevant areas that you can kind of align your skill set to, and then look at how you can tailor your own CV or what you say about yourself during an interview to make sure that you're incredibly relevant for what their hot topics are at the time.
Absolutely. And just that speaking someone else's language, not changing who you are, as you mentioned, but really helping someone else understand that. Oftentimes, I think we can say the exact same thing, but in many different ways. So it's really about, that message maybe isn't the message for me. It's a message for the hiring manager. So how can I modify that?
Oh, totally. And, you know, when we think about the foundations for resilience, my third foundation that we found was connecting. And I guess what you're describing there is making sure that you've got somebody in your life that will help you do that, because often it's quite hard for us to sit down with a piece of paper or sit down with our self dialogue and actually think, how am I going to say this in different ways for different organizations? And so if you've got a really great friend that isn't going to laugh at you and think that you're silly, or isn't going to, you know, undermine what it is that you say about yourself, they're going to be supportive. They're going to help you to shape what you say about yourself so that it's truthful, but so that it's impactful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So have you found that shaping that story and working with friends and colleagues is what's most impactful for people?
I guess it really depends on the person. That if, I'd like to hope that most of us have a special somebody in our life that that we can be truly honest with, and that we can sit down and be frustrated and say, look, I've applied to lots of different roles, but I keep being knocked back. You know, can you sit down and help me work out what I could say differently in my CV? And that for some people will be friends, for some people it will be colleagues. It may be that partners, it may be other members of family. You might have a mentor or somebody in the industry that can help you to even better tailor your conversation. Or if you really are stuck, it might be a recruitment consultant that's in that industry, because at the end of the day, it's in their interest to make sure that you've got a sharp CV, because ultimately that brings them success as well as you.
Absolutely. With that connectedness being such a core facet of this, right? You don't have to go it alone. There's plenty of people who are willing to help.
Oh, totally. And I'm always incredibly surprised by people that sit down with somebody like us, you know, career coaches, and we help them with thinking that through. And there's this real kind of bingo moment, and they say things like, God, I can't believe I didn't think of that before. You know, I've just been sending my CV over and over and over again. And I didn't think about pausing for a minute to wonder why it wasn't getting any further, and then get feedback from somebody who can really help me to sharpen it up.
Absolutely. I call that the spray and pray method.
Oh, right? Gosh, yes.
and there's so many of those myths, right? Like you touched on it really early in our conversation about how are we attracted to a job, but it's the it's time for job search. I should send my resume to everyone I know, and then every interview I need to go in to win, and I need to get the job, as opposed to having that conversation and seeing if it is the place that you want to work. We've been so conditioned to say, you know, I need to perform in a way that I get the job, as opposed to zooming out and saying, I could have a conversation with somebody about whether or not we're the right fit.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that interview, I do always think if we're going to be truly resilient, that interview shouldn't be the only place that we do that. So, you know, if we are lucky enough to get the job offer, I always encourage any candidates that are working with me to look for an opportunity to go spend some time with that business before you accept the offer. I'll always remember one wonderful client who I worked with years and years ago, who was job searching for a very long time in a very difficult environment. And she finally scored a job, and she phoned me up and she said, wow, you know, I'm so, so stoked. And I said, that's, you know, it's amazing news. So what are you going to do? And there was this awkward pause on the other end of the phone. And she said, actually, do you know what? I don't think I really know. So, you know, making sure, you know, resilience is an enormous topic, and there are so many factors that feed into it. But one of the things we owe ourselves is to make sure that when we do accept a job, it's either for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. So we've done our due diligence, and either we take on a role that we know is going to stress us out, but we've got a plan that it's, you know, maybe just a short-term fix, or it's something to give us the skill set for something we want in the longer term. Or it's just a question of, we need a job. Let's take something that's not necessarily what we want to do, but at least it pays the mortgage this month. So, you know, but don't stay there. Make sure that you've got a really clear idea of the reason that you're taking this job. You know, ultimately what we all want to aim for, I guess, is having a job that we really enjoy and that helps us to feel valued and motivated and helps us to grow and that we actually look forward to going to most days, not every day, that's unrealistic, but that we look forward to going to most days. But in order to do that, we have to have a plan around our work. And in order to do that, we have to have a really clear view of the destination that we're going to, not just show up on our first day without really knowing a little bit about the team that we're going to work with or having met the manager that we're going to work for. So I'd really suggest, you know, if you're lucky enough to get that job offer and the paperwork is with you, then see whether you can just go and spend a bit more time finding out about the job, because that will help your resilience in the longer term.
Yeah, making sure there's no questions or assumptions and testing those assumptions. Oh, I assume there will be a robust training plan. Well, let's just double check.
Yeah, totally. Let's ask questions, shall we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so impactful to say that, a reason, a season, or a lifetime, because that also gives people an anchor to hang on to, right? I'm here for a reason. It will serve a purpose, right? So it doesn't feel itchy or like, I gotta go. But like, there's a reason I'm here. And while that's relevant, I will stay. And then it also gives that permission to move on, right? With the reason or a season. That's really a freeing way to think about accepting a job.
Yeah, totally. I do love it, because I do think too many people that I've come across and that I've read about, you know, spend too long in jobs that they really just don't enjoy. And you know, we don't have to put ourselves under pressure to absolutely love our job. You know, that level of passion isn't available to every single person on the planet. But actually, if you're waking up miserable, if you're going to work and enduring the job all day, then do something. It may be that something takes time. It may be that you need help to achieve that something, but don't just stay and survive at work. I really do feel quite strongly about that.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a good segue to talk a little bit more about resilience. You mentioned that one of your four foundations of resilience is connection, but I'll just even back up a little bit further from that, because we hear the word resilience so much, but you wrote the book. So tell us, like, how do you define resilience? What does it really mean to have it?
Right. So, and what one of the wonderful things, and I always chuckle about this, is that in spite of writing the book, I don't think anybody really knows, to be honest. Resilience is one of those huge, huge topics. It's like well-being. You know, if I asked everybody listening to this radio show to give me their definition of well-being, I would get, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of answers. You know, in actual fact, we have to think about what does it mean through our own lens. And so when I wrote the book, that was one of the most important things for me, was to look at what are the different definitions of resilience that exist out there, and then how do we turn them into something that's our own. And so for me personally, it's very much about how we choose to recharge ourselves and grow on a career journey that we're taking towards achieving our goals. So if you imagine that, you know, you set yourself career goals, you set yourself relationship goals, you set yourself parenting goals or life goals, and we kind of imagine that it's going to be plain sailing to get there. But the reality is that life happens around us. We either have a really crappy day at work. I hope I can say the word crappy. We have a dreadful day at work. Or we have a true catastrophe for us in Christchurch. You know, we've had a terribly difficult time over the last 10 years with a number of major earthquake events, along with more recently, obviously, a terrible shooting event. And so, you know, what happens is life impacts our abilities to continue towards our goals. And so what we then do is we look at, okay, what are the different choices that we're making every single day that either help us or harm us when it comes to achieving our goals? You know, so I might say to myself, look, my goal is to achieve a certain, a certain number of conferences, talk at a certain number of conferences this year. And actually, I can then choose to either load myself up with far too many conferences and be absolutely exhausted, or I can choose to balance my time out and make sure that I can present my best possible self at each of those events. So it's very much about using what we know about the science of well-being and resilience to help us stay strong and recharge regularly, as opposed to waiting until we're so exhausted that recharging seems like just too much, it's too hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I tend to think of resilience in the moment and then having my bucket full. So if my bucket's full and I'm feeling good, it's a lot easier to be resilient and let things roll off my back. But if my bucket's empty and I'm feeling like I've spoken at 7 conferences over the last, you know, month or whatever it is, then I'm not that 8th conference is not going to be the best one because my bucket's pretty low.
Totally. So then you have to either give yourself permission to acknowledge that and say, look, I'm not going to be myself, best self, or really, really, as you say, check into your buckets and actually fill them up instead of emptying them further. So so do something that energizes you or creates a sense of peace and calm or whatever it is that you need to do before you go into that final conference so that you really can give it your all. And I think it's important to sort of, I love what you're saying there, Alison, about the concept of buckets. And I think that's a really great way to think about this. And so to give listeners an idea of how my resilience work originated, I was employed as a high performance coach for a huge construction project here in Christchurch, the biggest the country has ever seen. And we knew that we were going to have teams of people working from a lot of different organizations who were traditionally competitors, but would actually have to work to find a way to work together in order to rebuild the city after a series of earthquakes. Part of my role was actually to straddle the relationship between the researchers that landed into Christchurch to look at and study and analyse what happens during a major disaster like this, and then turn what they were finding into practical tools which we could use within the organisations that I was working in. The organisation that I worked with for the majority of time was called SCIRT, or the Stronger Christchurch Infrastructure Rebuild Team. And the reason we were known as the Stronger Christchurch Team was because the construction industry set itself a target of not just recovering from the earthquake, but actually leaving a legacy of stronger leaders and stronger employees. And so we had to look at what that meant and how we were going to deliberately design that into people, because not only were the teams we were working with having to rebuild the city, they were also going home at night, often to homes that didn't have running water. Sometimes even they didn't have homes to go to. They were in temporary accommodation. And they were not only working with people who were scared, you know, we had geotechnical engineers that we were asking to go into the ground to measure earth movement. You know, that's pretty terrifying at the best of times, but when you know that there could be an enormous earthquake any second, you know, for some people that just wasn't possible. But not only that, but you know, going home to families where, you know, children were suffering from PTSD, you know, this was a really major event for the city of only sort of 300,000. So it was an enormous opportunity for us to really lean into the science. And I have to confess, up until that point, I hadn't really thought about the science of well-being and resilience. I just did it. Mm-hmm. But what it did do was it gave us a really amazing opportunity to look at how can we take the science, what science is telling us about positive emotional state, connections, the impact of self-care, you know, what is it that the science is telling us? And then how can we make that information available to the people that we work with so they can make their own choices, but also deliberately design it into the organization so that where possible, we could provide an environment that would help rather than harm people under the circumstances.
Wow. And how did you roll that out? Because I can imagine people were so heads down, so focused on the task at hand and the well-being of themselves and their families and buildings day to day, how did you help people zoom out and focus on that resilience piece to even notice it was there?
Oh, totally. It's very, so we did it in a number of different ways, to be honest. And I think, you know, that's one of the very important things to reflect on when it comes to well-being and resilience at work, is that there is no one size fits all. So you can't just roll out, for example, mindfulness workshops and then assume that you've ticked the box for resilience. And actually, that's something that I'm so delighted to be speaking about in Texas at the HR Southwestern Conference at the end of October. You know, if you are an HR person listening to this podcast, please, you know, remember that that well-being and resilience as work is, and at work is much more than what I call food, fitness, and a sprinkling of yoga. It's very much about looking holistically. And so when we say roll it out, I'm not sure if roll it out is quite the right word. I think it was more kind of how did we unpack it and look at it and then make sure that the right bits went to the right places. And so the first thing we did was look for evidence within the organization. So where were the pockets of well-being that we knew we needed to highlight? So, for example, did we have new leaders that had never led a team before and that were being asked to lead in this really extreme environment? Then that to us was a pocket of risk when it came to well-being and resilience. So we highlighted them and we made sure that they had extra support around them to choose from. But it was very much a choice. So people didn't have to go to the learning events or choose the coaching, you know, et cetera, that we put in place. It was very much a choice. We made sure that we had regular focus every month on different areas of well-being. And we used the Mental Health Foundation's 5 Ways to Well-being in order to support us with doing that. And in fact, we very much leaned on the Mental Health Foundation's work in New Zealand to support us throughout the journey, because, you know, there are a lot of well-being hacks, should I say, out there, you know, people who are very, very much wanting to make a difference to well-being. And that's absolutely great. And I really applaud it. But what we wanted to make sure we did was work in with experts. So professionals who were absolutely 120% committed and qualified to help us make decisions about well-being. We also did things like regular well-being checks. So we had well-being checks every 6 months for nearly 6 years of our people. So making sure that you know, the teams were regularly telling us what was causing them stress and pressure at work, so that we could either work with them to get better at handling it, or we could try to do something about it. Did we get it right all the time? Absolutely not. Was everybody 120% well and resilient through the project? Absolutely not. But we won so many awards for the work that we did, and you know, that really to me set up the requirement, I think, or the obligation for me to write my book, because I wanted to share what we had learned so that other people could benefit from it.
Absolutely, absolutely. What an achievement. So part of the work that you do and the way that you've set up some frameworks around this is you mentioned you're one of the foundations, which is Connectedness, but can you share the foundations of resilience that you have created and talk about in the book?
Yeah, totally. So my framework is based on an amazing framework by an organization called Resilient Organizations. So these guys and girls are academic researchers within New Zealand. They actually work in the States as well. And their focus is on understanding what it takes for an organization to not just survive, but thrive in environments of extreme uncertainty. And so they designed a framework known as Adaptive Resilience. And that was very much a framework used for designing resilience into organizations. But when I was working with them, I thought, well, I wonder if this is an opportunity for us to look at how can we deliberately design resilience into people rather than just organizations. Because I guess, you know, it's great if you happen to be working for an organization that gives a stuff about resilience and well-being and will, you know, make sure that leaders have got emotional intelligence and are able to have really good conversations with their teams. But if you don't work for an organization like that, what on earth can you do? And so what I did was I worked with them to look at how do I turn the foundations for adaptive resilience in organizations into foundations for people, just individuals. And so the first foundation is that of emotional honesty. And I think, you know, that's much more than self-awareness. Self-awareness is kind of knowing what you're feeling right now and knowing what's going on for you, listening to those voices in your head and checking that they're telling you the truth. But emotional honesty is taking that a step further and thinking, okay, what do I now do with this? You know, if this has been my third dreadful week at work and I am so stressed that I'm just not sleeping, what do I actually do with that information? Where do I take it? Who do I talk to? And how do I share the emotional place that I'm in so that I can then help myself or get somebody else to help me back into a much more positive place? Because, you know, being in a negative and stressed place isn't necessarily a problem, but it becomes a problem if we stay there for too long. And so that's kind of the start place, I guess, for resilience when it comes to my definition of what resilience at work looks like. And then after that, if we want to become more resilient or grow our resilience, we have to think about an additional three buckets. And I'm going to use that definition of buckets, Alison, because I love what you were sharing earlier. So the first bucket is self-care. And this is more than just going for a run or trying to squeeze in a yoga class. It's about thinking what works for you and what do you need at this particular point in time. So, you know, I might have days where I need energy. And so I might make sure that I know what gives me energy, and then I choose to do things that give me energy. Or I might need peace. So I need to just be a bit more self-aware about what are the things in my life that re-energize me. And the reason for that is that what we see when we come under quite considerable pressure at work is that self-care often falls off the first. We kind of tell ourselves, like, I'll just sit here and I'll finish this report, even though it's really late. I will just get it done and then I'll go for a run, or then I'll go to the gym, or then I'll go home and see the people that I love. But actually what happens is it gets later and later and later, and suddenly we think, do you know, it's too late for me to do that thing. And so I'm quite horrified by this, because, you know, what we know about resilience is that self-care is critical. If we had a telephone, for example, you know, I get a bit panicky if my battery power gets below 50% on my telephone. And I'd like to encourage you to think of, you know, why is it okay for you to leave yourself to get below 50%, and it's not okay for you to leave your phone to get below 50%. You know, which one's the most important thing to you in your life? So, you know, I'd encourage you to think about yourself like a phone, I guess. You know, where's your energy at? You know, use that sense of emotional honesty to check in, and then choose to do something that really kind of takes you to a better place. Self-care can be physical well-being as well as spiritual well-being. So some people get their self-care from reconnecting to the church, to nature, you know, whatever it is that gives you that recharge. That's what we're talking about with self-care. The third bucket is connecting. And this is very much about making sure that we reach out, we don't withdraw. You know, I've worked with clients who are on very sort of flight, we call them FIFO, fly in, fly out contracts. So they live in another part of New Zealand and they work down here. And too many of them, you know, they work really late at night because they don't want to go and talk to people, because they're, you know, they don't want to spend time with people. They don't want to go back to the accommodation where they're living. And what happens is their resilience just gets lower and lower. Their well-being goes down and down. And then the final foundation is learning. And this, I think, makes a difference between surviving and thriving. You know, we can set ourselves a goal at work around doing a great job. But actually, if we just keep going and keep going, even if things aren't going to plan, that's not really resilience. That's just keeping going. And so, you know, the learning kicks in where we can actually look for feedback about, you know, what we could do better. Or maybe there's someone else who's been in this situation before, and they may have ideas that we can learn from. So those are the four buckets, I guess, for what we know creates well-being and resilience at work.
Well, and they're so interconnected, right? Emotional honesty, self-care, connecting and learning. It's almost hard to untangle them from one another, yeah. Isn't it?
Oh, completely. And I think, you know, that's, I think, is part of the tangle of well-being. You know, one of the realities is that it's complicated. It's not a simple fix. We can't just take a tablet and say, right, that's it, I've got well-being for life, or have an inoculation. You know, it's about making sure that you do a little quick check-in. I have what I call Well-Being Wednesday. So every Wednesday, I have a little reminder that pops up in my diary that just has those four foundations written on them. And I think to myself, right, okay, over the last week, how have I been feeling? You know, how do I feel right now? What kind of emotions are going on for me, so that I kind of reconnect to whether I'm in a good place or whether I'm going to have a really stressful week? And then I ask myself, right, what did I do last week to look after myself, you know, for self-care? What do I have planned into my diary for this next week? You know, who did I meet last week that made me laugh or refilled my cup? You know, and who am I going to be meeting this week? And similarly, you know, what did I learn from last week? What do I need to do differently? And what opportunities do I have for learning this week? And if I do that every week, it means that I don't sort of go on to autopilot and sleepwalk my way into a well-being issue. You know, I don't suddenly get to Christmas and realize that it's been 3 months since I actually went and spent time recharging or spent time with somebody who I love. So, you know, it's very much about keeping a regular eye and then nudging myself back to well-being. And that way I never have to worry about it, because it never becomes an issue. Well, it becomes an issue if we have a big thing happen, like an earthquake. But that's why we have to have strategies around a full bucket to start with, so that we can then cope much more effectively if something super unexpected happens.
Absolutely. And you can't get too much below that 50% if you're checking every week. And
totally.
Yeah. You end up having that perspective of this is a new week and this week will be a little bit different too. So it doesn't feel so jarring and upsetting if a week isn't so good, because you can look back and say, oh, well, last week this thing happened and I made it through, or last week was really, really great. So it's possible to have really, really great weeks, even if it doesn't feel like it in the moment.
Oh, absolutely, Alison. And I think, you know, that perspective is so important. And I think, you know, my gut tells me that that's one of the things that we lose when we allow ourselves to get below 20-30% on our recharge levels. And we lose that perspective. We find ourselves stuck. And that's when we start giving up and withdrawing and retreating. And so, you know, when I talked about, you know, the impact of an enormous event, that's why we need to, I think, have two plans. A plan to make sure that we are keeping ourselves as buoyant and resilient as possible on an everyday basis. So that's my Well-Being Wednesday. And also making sure that we have ideas or knowledge about what to do if we do have a significant event, if we do suddenly lose our job or become diagnosed with some sort of illness, or we lose our house or our partner leaves us, you know, because these are all everyday occurrences that happen to so many of us. And so the reality is they will happen. So how can we make sure we're resourced to handle them better when they do?
Absolutely. I think it can be so easy to bury your head in the sand. For me, I'm very positive. And so I notice the things that are going well. And I tend to brush the things that aren't going so well under the rug. But a really impactful thing that happened to me over the past year is I realized that those things were bothering me, but I wasn't acknowledging them, because why dwell? You know, why think about those things? Everything else is going so well. And so now my husband and I will have like a little complain at the end of the day. And it's not because everything's so terrible, but it's almost like we need to acknowledge that not everything was awesome. And then once you say it out loud, you can kind of let it go. Yeah, I'm like, that person sent me or didn't respond to an email, and I think that was rotten, or whatever it was, instead of me kind of not even realizing that I'm thinking about it, but that it's really getting to me. So it's okay too to say today was rotten and tomorrow might not be, or we'll see.
Totally. And you know, Alison, that's a beautiful example of emotional honesty. You know, I think we set ourselves up, you know, there's been too much media coverage about the impact of positivity. I love it. You know, don't get me wrong. I actually work with the New Zealand Institute for Wellbeing and Resilience, and we train positivity. We help people to realize the science of the mind and recognize that that actually, you know, our brains are hardwired to notice the negative as opposed to the positive. You know, and you know, you are so blessed and lucky and amazing to be such a buoyant person. And I think that buoyancy is a really great way to think about it. And, you know, at the Institute, we talk about, you know, resilience and well-being as being about almost like flotation. You know, so some people are naturally buoyant. You are clearly one of those people. The rest of us have to learn how to become buoyant and how to handle life when it doesn't go to plan more effectively and better. But we don't handle that simply by being positive all the time. You know, that's a little bit Pollyanna and not particularly realistic. So that emotional honesty of saying, actually, do you know what, today was crap, but that doesn't mean the rest of this week's going to be crap. It means that I now acknowledge that today was crap. I'm going to put a full stop on it, and then I'm going to activate my emergency well-being strategies so that tomorrow is a new and different and better day.
Yeah, and tuning in, what is the thing I need if this day was crap? Is it a run? Is it a wine? Is it a pity party? And, you know, and just I feel bad for myself. What are those things that will keep me well and kind of acknowledge that it's a new phase?
Totally. And I do, you know, I really acknowledge that, you know, we've kind of come full circle back to heart and head, and, you know, that your heart will tell you, you know, you've had a really crap day, eat the chocolate. And so there are definitely some short term coping strategies that we all use because we're human. You know, we binge watch Netflix and we have a glass of wine and we grab a bar of chocolate. You know, there are things that we do because we're human. But what we know from science, and our head will remind our heart should we let them have a conversation, that actually they are just not long-term coping strategies. So if you find that your coping strategies revolve around having a good old complain, making, you know, having too much wine, you know, if it turns into a wine every single night, if it turns into a bar of chocolate every single night, then you're actually not being emotionally honest with yourself. You're actually, you're dampening down what you really do feel. So it's time to sort of put that to one side and have a good hard chat with yourself.
Yeah, and thinking of what are those multitude of options, right? Having anything be the over and over and over solution, it's probably not the solution every time.
Right? Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And it's having, you can have short-term coping strategies as long as you've got your longer-term coping strategies too. And so what I'm suggesting is your long-term coping strategies are these four buckets. So investing in emotional honesty, self-care, connecting and learning. You'll notice nothing mentions chocolate or wine. But I'm, you know, one of the first people to have a crappy day and say, do you know what, I'm going to have, actually, maybe not wine, maybe a nice gin and tonic. But but if I have my well-being check-in and I think, actually, there's been more than one of those this week. I need to do something different. I need to make different choices. And part of me wonders if that's one of the reasons that we're all getting so bad at well-being, is that it means that we're going to have to do something that requires a bit of work, that requires letting go of some of the comforts, some of the crutches that we've put around us to support us. You know, the nice tasting chocolate isn't actually a long-term strategy, and that might make me a little bit cross and a little bit sad because I might be a little bit addicted to the sugar. So it's a well-being and resilience, I think, is a powerhouse collision of so many different fields of science and information, and I think, you know, it's time for us to really listen to what science is telling us and make different choices. Otherwise, we're potentially on the sort of self-destruct pathway.
And starting to I love these four buckets, because you can really, if you need something, looking at these four buckets, you can probably quickly identify which is the one that's missing and which is the one that will tick that box for you.
Totally. And so, funnily enough, at the beginning of my book, there's a couple of little quizzes to help people to see where they're currently investing and where they might be neglecting, so that they don't have to read the full book. They can just go to the right chapter to help them work out, okay, what's the science behind this particular bucket, and what are some really great ideas that that other people have done. There's case studies in there so that we can look at, you know, if people that I've been working with have been missing from the self-care bucket, what is it that they've done, for example, and then you can make choices to refill your own buckets as required, because, you know, it's very much about really noticing, you know, most of us have a go-to place. You know, I'm the kind of person, I try and research my way out of anything, and so I'm all over that learning bucket. My learning bucket is almost constantly full. My connecting bucket is usually pretty full too, but the self-care I need to be really careful with, because I'm a mum. I live on a farm outside of Christchurch, so I do have to drive an hour to go and see clients, so that, you know, immediately takes a couple of hours out of my day, and so, you know, making sure that self-care bucket is full is critical. Now that I know, the science shows me, if it's not, I've got problems. I'm actually setting myself up to not feel good and function well. And, you know, ultimately that's where we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned your Wellness Wednesdays and your weekly check-ins a few times. Just so listeners, if they're thinking, oh, I can do once a week, because that sounds really manageable, how much time do you dedicate to that review each week?
Literally 3 minutes. it can seriously be that quick. So it really depends on how you want to use that time. To be perfectly honest, Alison, at the start, I used to book out an hour. I would go and sit down with a cup of coffee, and I would actually sit and research. I researched my way out of anything. Yeah. I would learn more about the science of well-being, and I would use that time to grow my knowledge about how I could become better at feeling good and functioning well. But I have reached the point where I now plan that in, not weekly. So this is literally just a little a page reminder in my diary to just check in. Some weeks I miss it. That's actually okay. You know, I'm not perfect, but it's in there, and it means that it's a reminder. It takes the thinking away from me. I'm wanting to use my technology to help me, rather than what it can do, which is overwhelm us. So use your technology to help you to stay on top of those four buckets, and keep your buckets as full as possible, because it will help you with, whether you're looking for a job or whether you're in a job, it will help you with your well-being and resilience at work.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here today and sharing all these wonderful tools. So as we close up, Catherine, can you share with people where they can find the book and where they can find more about you? Because I know you have lots and lots of resources, even beyond the book.
Yeah, totally. Gosh, I can't believe it's that time already. Doesn't time fly when you're in your flow? So the book, it's called Resilience at Work: Practical Tools for Career Success, and it's published by an organization, it's published by a company called Routledge, who are globally available. So you can either walk into your local bookstore and ask whether it's stocked. If it's not stocked, it's available on pretty much any online retailer. I know that Amazon has copies. More information about me and access to my books is at www.careerbalance.co.nz. That's C-A-R-E-E-R. BALANCE.co.nz. And it's been wonderful to be invited to the show, Alison. Thank you so very much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. It was so valuable. And again, it's been Catherine Jackson who's sharing all of this very valuable information with us about resilience. I will be back subbing for Jen again next week with my friend Tracy Beard, who will be talking about getting your child the job. So we're going beyond get yourself the job and looking at how you can set your children and the young adults in your life up for career success. Thanks again, Catherine, and wishing you all a lovely day.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.